Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Bill Roscio and Tom Justin of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, they are senior fellows, keep the Longword Journal. And in the course of these many years of their following the story in the Ummah, the vast landscape, they watch for the jihadists and their bad actor sponsors. They have accumulated a great deal of detailed information about leadership in Al-Qaeda, leadership in the Taliban, leadership in ISIS. All of that information is useful when the Pentagon makes an announcement about what appears to be a success, or a success that also met with tragedy. All of that information is good to communicate to the public. However, there are now questions building about what the DOD is telling the American citizenry about its mission, about its conduct, about the road ahead. And without an informed citizenry, there's no possibility that this conduct can be endorsed indefinitely. And we're going to start today in Syria, a drone strike against what was said to be a senior Al-Qaeda leader, where there may have been collateral damage. We can now confirm there was collateral damage, but Tom and Bill, a very good day to you. Tom, I begin with your article in the Dispatch. What do we know about that Al-Qaeda strike in Syria, a darkness-visible landscape to begin with? And what has the DOD told us about its thinking? Good day to you, Tom.
Good day, John. So on December 3rd, the U.S. military conducted a drone strike with a Reaper drone that targeted what they say was an alleged Al-Qaeda terrorist known as Musab Kenan. And he was on a motorbike. The drone campaign, a lot of times what the U.S. does is they try and target guys, suspected terrorists, who are on either motorcycles or driving in cars with other suspected terrorists, sort of discrete targets to try and minimize civilian casualties. Unfortunately, in this case, they launched a drone strike on the motorcycle, and there was reportedly there was a car full with family members who were trying to overtake them past the motorcycle, and they got hit as collateral damage in this attack. And there were six members of the family in the car, and apparently the 10-year-old boy was among those who were severely wounded. As I write in the Dispatch, you know, one of the aspects of this is the press, you know, does a lot to uncover civilian casualties in some of these cases where the U.S. isn't forthcoming. But there's another aspect to this where the U.S. is not forthcoming. They don't really explain. U.S. military, CENTCOM, U.S. intelligence officials aren't really explaining to the American public in a sufficient amount of detail who it is they're striking or why. They simply talk about somebody like Musab Kenan, and they say, well, he was a senior Al-Qaeda planner and that sort of thing. But they don't provide any more details about him. And then there's contradictory details online. And why is that important? Well, it's important for a lot of reasons. One, if you're going to risk civilian casualties, you better have a clear mission, explain why you're doing it. But two, you know, John, you know us for years. I'm a nerd who's been covering this stuff very carefully. If I don't know who an Al-Qaeda guy is or why the U.S. military is taking a strike against him, then I know for sure the American public doesn't know. And so in my piece, I explained this isn't a standalone case. There have been a series now of drone strikes in Syria where the U.S. military is really putting out very little information about who it is they're going after or why.
You cite a December 6th press conference, John Kirby, the speaker for the Pentagon. What he told us that this individual, Musab Kenan, it may or may not be a real name, is or was a senior leader with Haras al-Din, which is an Al-Qaeda-affiliated group. Can you explain a little more, Tom? What is Haras al-Din? What does that mean about Kenan?
So, I mean, Haris al-Din is, in fact, an al-Qaeda group that's easy to justify. I mean, I can give you a whole dossier of information on them. And its leadership is filled with al-Qaeda veterans, guys that we know. And if they were to have, if U.S. military were to have gone after one of those guys, it would be easy to see why they were going after them and have justification for doing so. But, you know, there's a lot of this is murky when it comes to what's going on with al-Qaeda in Syria. The U.S. government hasn't, you know, take a step back for a second, John. Part of what I tell people, I give lectures on sort of the history of al-Qaeda, and I've done this recently in other venues. And one of the most striking facts is that I don't think the U.S. government has made an attempt to really explain what al-Qaeda looks like as an organization since July 2004, when the 9/11 Commission report came out and offered a brief sketch of what the organizational structure of al-Qaeda looks like. The U.S. government does very little to update the American public on what al-Qaeda looks like today. And that includes with its presence in Syria, where there are many known al-Qaeda actors that Bill and I can document. But then there are unknowns like this guy who was struck in the drone strike, and we have no idea who he really is or how he fit into al-Qaeda or what his scheme was. You know, for example, they use these generic statements like he was a senior al-Qaeda planner. Well, what does that mean, right? I mean, exactly in what role was he? What did he play? Was he part of an external operations wing that was planning attacks against the West? They didn't say so, but if he was, that should have been noted. If so, who does he report to? How does this work? You know, who's in charge? You know, they don't provide you the types of details about an enemy that still exists 20 years after 9/11 that they should be providing the American public.
Bill, I come to you because we have talked over the years, and this is decades now, gentlemen, about our drone strikes, presumed drone strikes, and other parts of the Ummah. I can recall you keeping a chart of drone strikes during the Obama administration in East Africa, the rise and fall of those drone strikes. Now we're led to believe they're drone strikes in other parts of the Sahel against other al-Qaeda-related organizations. So drawing up on your detail over the years, Bill, not just in Afghanistan, but throughout Africa, throughout the Middle East, AQAP, did the DOD ever provide us detailed information, its thinking, especially in the hot years when al-Qaeda was in the news every day as an aggressor?
Yes, John. Good evening. And so, you know, first, Tom is 100% here. The U.S. military, and I'll expand this to the intelligence community's efforts or lack thereof to explain who our enemy is and who we're targeting is self-defeating. And we have to realize that not every strike should be detailed. Sometimes these strikes are after military targets, low-level targets, things of that nature. But if you want to make an announcement on an individual, you really should come to the table with more than just a single sentence description on who you're dealing with. Like at the Long War Journal, we detailed these strikes against al-Qaeda and the Afghan and Pakistani Taliban and various groups inside of Pakistan. You're right, in Yemen against AQAP, in Somalia against both ISIS and Shabab, and in Africa, Libya, and all over the globe. We've worked on documenting this. I think part of the problem here is the failure. The intelligence community, the CIA, when it was in charge of the strikes, didn't have to. It was under no obligation to provide any information. These were the strikes in the shadows, as the Bush administration described them. And then the military was given the primary control because of the desire to limit civilian casualties and accountability, things of that nature. And the military is just really bad at this. To answer your question, at certain period of time, we got some decent information from either the CIA, intelligence community, or the military, but it's been very haphazard. And in more cases than not, when we did get good information, it was usually, again, on individuals that we knew about. But when we didn't, it was, it was often because these were individuals who are unknown. And this is the military is really bad at, and its information operations have been just horrific since the surge inside of Iraq. It just has done a terrible job at explaining what it was doing and why it was doing in general, and in the case of targeted killings, who it was targeting and why they were important individuals to be targeted.
Tom's piece in the Dispatch also gives us information, what we don't know, about two earlier MQ-9 Reaper strikes, one in September in Idlib province, another one in October somewhere in Syria. Both times, Tom, you note senior Al-Qaeda leader with no more information. We don't know whether this is progress, whether this is the same person. We don't know why they're doing this whatsoever. And with the limited understanding we have of our politics, you know, one side, it's like a food fight all the time. It behooves both sides to keep the American people informed. Otherwise, these mysterious moments when the American people turn away from the responsibility to places like Afghanistan, we can explain it because the DOD didn't bother to tell us why we were there. What little do you know about the September and October strikes, Tom?
Well, very little, John. But again, both these actors seem to be part of Haris al-Din. In one case, there was only information provided by jihadis on social media. CENTCOM put out a statement that provided no details whatsoever about who was struck or why. And the other case, they offered a nom de guerre, Abdul Hamid al-Matar, and provided some background information that sort of implied that he was involved in plotting against the U.S. or the West, but didn't really provide any concrete details. And I would just say this. I mean, the part of the problem here, John, is just look at the information marketplace at this point. I think that the opposition to these types of drone strikes sort of outweighs the support for them. And the military really has to be tone deaf not to understand that, not to understand that they're conducting kinetic operations, military strikes in places like Syria without sufficiently explaining why. And meanwhile, there is plenty of opposition to it throughout the press and throughout non-government organizations and other actors. And on top of that, you know, think about this. This is part of the reason why I'm pressing this case, too. Think about all of the rhetoric we've heard from senior U.S. officials through the years talking about how Al-Qaeda is decimated, on the run, a shadow of its former self. They've on the one hand, they've given all this rhetoric to the U.S., the public, the American people, saying that Al-Qaeda is basically a spent force. And meanwhile, they claim to be targeting all these senior Al-Qaeda leaders in Syria. Well, I mean, if it's such a spent force, then why are you forced to strike a series of senior Al-Qaeda leaders in Syria or elsewhere? And so I think this is part of what I'm saying here is I think there's been an intellectual confusion over our enemies for a long time. And I think that confusion and that unwillingness to actually explain what's going on or be transparent is fueling a lot of discontent. And ultimately, this is going to hurt our ability to conduct counterterrorism missions.
Tom, Syria is an ungoverned space. However, we know because of geopolitics that Russia, Iran, and Turkey are all involved in Syria. And I'll add Israel and Lebanon as well, given their nationals are dealing with Syria's open darkness visible all the time. Do we even know where this so-called information that led to these strikes came from? Are the Russians telling us that there's a Al-Qaeda leader on a motorbike somewhere? Do we even know that much?
I doubt it's coming from the Russians. I mean, I think the U.S. still has the ability to do some tactical tracking and probably has some information along those lines. I'm not asking for them to blow the whistle on all that and explain all the nitty-gritty. But, you know, John, you say, you know, Syria's ungoverned space. Well, Idlib is actually governed by Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which is an Al-Qaeda offshoot, which has had problems with Al-Qaeda senior leadership. But this is another example of why the U.S. government needs to explain what it's doing. So Idlib is controlled by this organization, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. There's now an active lobby on behalf of this group in Washington and elsewhere trying to get the U.S. and others to provide humanitarian assistance to them and play ball and delist them as a terrorist organization. But meanwhile, you have all these supposed senior Al-Qaeda guys running around, HTS or Hayat Tahrir al-Sham controlled Idlib. How is that the case? Why is the U.S. government not explaining that? I mean, you have U.S. diplomats who've been basically very close to vouching for Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, just as they did the Taliban. And yet, meanwhile, you have these senior Al-Qaeda guys running around, supposedly according to the U.S. military, in the territory they control. This is, again, you know, speaks to the fundamental confusion on all of this.
Tom Jocelyn, Bill Rogio, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. They keep the Long War Journal and other publications. When we come back, Operation Talon E. Anvil. Talon Anvil. Sounds sinister. It was effective, but this is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.